morning I want us to look at a new subject entitled Another Motto to Attach to Your Wrist. The motto is WDGEOM. Now, I know that's not a real simple combination of letters to remember. I'll run through it again. WDGEOM. Have you seen, or do you own, or do you wear one of the WWJD wrist bracelets? I'm not sure of the origin, when and where this started, this saying, this motto, but its popularity has seemingly continued to grow. WWJD, if you're not familiar with the four letters, just simply stands for What Would Jesus Do? I think it started out among the young people, sort of as a question that they would use to guide them in making decisions when they had to make some kind of choice between what was right and what was wrong for them to do. They would just quickly look at the bracelet or a t-shirt or whatever and remember WWGD, what would Jesus do, and try to figure out from what he would do, and of course what they should do in that situation. The kind of choice he would make would be the kind of choice that they would make. Well, if WWJD is getting kind of shop-worn to you, I want to give you some new letters that you can put on your wrist or write on your wall or wherever, and you can change to a new motto, WDGEOM. You may say, well, WWJD is a lot easier than WDGEOM. That's true, but maybe WDGEOM is more adult sounding to you. It is a little bit hard to remember. For the time being now, I'm going to let you try and guess the meaning behind the letters of WDGEOM. I guess you could call it wedge 'em if you wanted to make a word out of it. I am encouraged that there are still people, Christian people, like those wearing the WWJD bracelet, who still believe that Jesus expects something of them that follow him. I'm amazed that we still have some folks who understand that when you follow Jesus, that he expects something of you. We have a lot of folks who seemingly haven't learned that yet. You just accept Jesus Christ and you're going to heaven, and that's about the end of the story. And as far as what he expects of you, who cares? And we're not going to take time to even find out. We'll just call him our Savior, and that's all we'll know him as, and that's all we're concerned about. So that's what we're happy with. I sometimes get the feeling that many of the so-called converts take God up on his offer of heaven and then say to themselves, I'll make it a point to say to themselves, but now God must not expect anything of me. I expect heaven from him, but I mean, God needs to be put on notice. He better not expect very much out of me. He must not expect my allegiance. He must not expect my support. He must not expect my loyalty. He must not expect me to make any kind of changes. Best for God to understand this from the very beginning and not get his hopes up, because if he does, he will be greatly disappointed. And so if God is going to save himself some grief, he had better learn just to expect almost next to nothing from me, because nothing is about all he's going to get in most situations. And I hope he understands that, because that's the way it's going to be. I think you're probably familiar with the parable Jesus told of the three servants. It's found in Matthew 25, verses 14 through 27. I normally do not read this lengthy passage on the radio, but I believe it's important that I do so this morning. So bear with me. I'll read rather rapidly because I think you probably know the story. Jesus says the kingdom of heaven is like a man traveling into a far country who calls together his servants and delivers to them some goods. That is, he makes some investments in these servants. Unto one he gave 5 talents. To another he gave 2 talents. To the third he gave 1 talent. To every man according to his individual ability, and immediately left on his journey. The one that received the 5 talents went out and invested with it, traded with it, worked with it, and made a handsome profit. Now I'm putting this in there. He gained 5 more talents. He doubled the investment. And likewise, the man that had received 2 talents, he also doubled his investment and he gained 2 more. But the one that received the 1 talent didn't do anything with it. He just went and dug a hole in the ground and just invested the money in a box in the ground. That's all he did with it. And after a long time, the Lord of the servants came back from his journey and called for an accounting of what had been taken place, been done while he was gone. And so the one that received the 5 talents came and brought the additional double investment, 5 talents, and saying, Lord, you gave me 5, and look here, I picked up 5 more. Now you have 10. You've doubled your investment. And the Lord said, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Now the one that received the 2 talents came and said, Lord, you gave me 2. I didn't have as much as the other fellow, but I did just as well as he did. I doubled your investment. And the Lord said, well done, thou good and faithful servant. I'm pleased with you 2 fellows. Now, the one that had received the 1 talent came and said, Lord, I knew that you were a very, very hard man. You didn't want to lose any money. You didn't want to lose on your investment, so I guarantee that you wouldn't lose anything. So I went and buried it in the ground. And I was afraid I would lose, and so therefore I wouldn't take any chances. But here is exactly what you gave me. You haven't lost a penny. You didn't gain a penny, but you haven't lost anything. And the Lord said, why, you wicked and lazy, slothful, good-for-nothing servant. You knew I wanted a return on my investment. You should have at least put my money out to the exchangers. Bought some CDs, I guess. And at least at my coming, I would have received something, some interest on my investment. Now, that's sort of a paraphrase, a little bit, of the scripture found in Matthew 25. You're familiar with the story. How many of us are like that third servant? God invests in us daily. He's gone away now. He is in heaven. He's going to come back. But God invests every day in us, and He keeps us alive, and He keeps us healthy, and He keeps us employed. I mean, God invests pretty heavily in you and me every day. He's already invested in us this morning. Now, what is God going to get for His investment? You say, well, He shouldn't expect any return. He shouldn't expect any interest. He shouldn't expect any gain. Well, folks, according to this parable, He does expect that. And like the servant, many of us say, well, God, you get nothing. Huh? You get nothing. Now, was Jesus pleased in this parable with getting nothing? Now, He expected a return. He didn't demand any certain amount, but I mean, He expected something. And the one man, well, you get nothing. And he thought Jesus would applaud him and pat him on the back and say, well done. But He didn't do that. Now, how can this man reach this idea that God doesn't expect anything for His investment in us? Can it be because we think God has no right to expect anything of us? Or could it be that we just don't like what God expects and therefore just refuse to give it to Him? Or can it be that it's just due to ignorance and we don't know what God expects? Or can it be the attitude that I'm just not going to be concerned or interested or bothered to find out what it is that God expects? it seems to be a human trait that all of us just expect things of other people. But we don't feel like people have a right to expect things of us. Huh? It's sort of a one-way street. I expect you to do this or be like this, but I have no right to expect this of me. I expect to be allowed to preach, but don't expect me to practice what I preach. Now, that's a bad motto for a preacher. And this notion that I can expect something of you, but you have no right to expect anything of me, I think plays real havoc in marriages. And so we get married and we expect to live happily ever after. And then we run into the expectation wall. And the boy expects something of his bride, and she didn't realize that he expected that. And then the bride expects something of the husband, and he didn't know she expected that. Because they never made known what they expected. Probably had they made known prior to the wedding, there would not have been a wedding. Does the girl expect the boy to every day pick up his clothes? I've got news for her. Does she expect the boy to keep everything neatly in place? Does she expect the boy to take out the trash, to fix whatever it is in the house that breaks, to take care of the yard, to even go grocery shopping, to chew with his mouth closed? I mean, what does she expect? Well, she hasn't told him, and he hasn't tried to find out, because honestly, he doesn't really care what she expects. Well, now, he's got his list of expectations. He expects her to sew the buttons on his shirt, to make the bed daily and keep a neat house, to wash and iron his clothes, and maybe to manage finances, or maybe that's what he expects to do. He expects her to ask permission to buy anything over a dollar. He expects for her to do all, or let him do all the driving and her say nothing about the way he drives. I mean, you see, folks, he expects something and she said, hey, that's not what I expect to do. And we could carry this list on and on and on. And finally, I would hit a sensitive nerve just about in everybody. If you expect that, honey, you expecting too much. Because that's not on my list of things I feel I should be expected to do. All of us come into relationships with people. And when we do, we expect certain responses, certain etiquette, certain manners, certain courtesy, certain considerations, and we don't get them. We don't get them. I remember when I was a boy growing up, I had to ride the city bus to school. My mama always taught me, when you get on the bus and the bus is full and an older person gets on, especially a lady, you get up and you give her your seat. Now, that wasn't what I expected ought to be done. But that's what my mother told me, that's what I should do. And she said, I expect that of you. Well, I did. I would get up, I would stand, and I'd let the elderly person sit down. Now, when you come into certain situations, are there things that should be, I repeat, expected of you? Are there certain ways I should act? If you give somebody something, do you expect for them to say, thank you? Do you expect for children today to say, yes, sir, and no, sir, and yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am? If you do, I don't know where you're going to find them. But is it not right that we should expect some kind of consideration for people? And when it's not given, do we not get disgusted and frustrated and grieved and disappointed and sometimes even angered? I think one of the number one reasons some people quit church is they get their feelings hurt. They come to church with some expectations. All right? Now, the church is going to have some expectations of them, too. But that's not the ones that I think cause the problem. Somebody doesn't do what they expected, and they get their feelings hurt. They miss church, and they expect somebody to call them. They go to the hospital, and they expect some flowers, and they expect a card, and they expect a visit from the preacher, and none of these things happen. And so none of their expectations were fulfilled, and so out of the church they go. Or they didn't expect somebody to say something that was said, and they got their feelings hurt, and they were offended, and there was expected apology, and there was no apology made, and they're gone. Everybody scratches their head and wonder, I wonder why they don't go to church anymore. Nobody ever tries to dig down and find out what is it that they expected that they didn't get. What was they expected that didn't happen? I think some folks don't expect to hear sermons that like this that might condemn them. And when they hear one, oops, this is the wrong place for us. I didn't expect them to be scolded when I went to church. I expected to be humored, and I expected to be pampered, and I expected to be cheered and encouraged, and for everybody to be optimistic. I didn't expect to be condemned, so I'm gone. Now, I think a lot of people just expect too much in going to church, but nevertheless, that's their expectations. And when they're not fulfilled, they get upset. Now, I tell you, let me suggest something to you. You ought to make this a rule. I don't know how you can carry it out, but you ought to let people know what you expect. Now, that may take too much doing it. The list may be too long, and you couldn't hold their attention that long, and they may get upset with your book of expectations, but nevertheless, it would sure help relieve some tensions and some problems if all of us would let somebody else know what we expected. Don't let it be a determination of their imagination, or leave it up to their common sense, or, well, it ought to be just obvious, because it's not obvious. Or don't let it be, well, they'll see what other people do and they will copy them. I don't trust the situation of expectations to those flimsy methods. I'm told today, I don't know this, that successful companies have a complete job description. From what time it is you get to work, as well as everything in the job you're supposed to do. The company says, we're not going to leave anything to guesswork. We'll tell you everything we expect you to do. And your job performance will be based on fulfilling all this list of expectations that we lay out for you before you even go to work and get your first day's pay. A number of years ago, I was asked to teach a night course at a Christian college in Houston. I'd never taught college before. It was a new experience for me. First thing I was told by the dean of the school was that there must not be any surprises placed upon the students. In other words, he said, I want you to tell them everything on the first day of class that you expect. I want you to write down an outline of what you're going to teach them, how many tests you're going to give, how you're going to grade, your policy on attendance. I want you to let the students know everything that you expect of them. Well, the first thing I discovered when he told me what it was, I didn't know what I expected. I didn't have answers for any of those things. I hadn't even thought about those things. I just take them as they came. Well, he said, nope. Everything must be laid out in advance. Because if you don't do that, then you're going to be part of the problem of setting yourself up for disappointment and frustration to the students. Let them know in advance what it is you expect of them. Then you can grade them on whether they do live up to your expectation or not. There is an event recorded in the ministry of Christ that has always troubled me. Another better word would be, it has always frightened me. I don't like to read this verse. It really troubles me. It's in Matthew 21, 18 through 20. Now, in the morning, as Jesus was returning to the city, he had some hunger pangs. In other words, he got hungry. Felt hungry. He wanted something to eat. So he looked around, and the first thing he saw was a fig tree beside the road. So he came to the fig tree, but he found no figs. All that he found was leaves. Of course, you don't eat fig leaves. And he said to the tree, strength, I mean, I don't talk to trees, but he said to the tree, let no fruit grow on you hereafter forever. And the tree immediately withered and died. And when the disciples saw it, they marveled. I think God offended. And said, look how quickly this tree dried up, withered away, and died. Now, when Jesus came to the fig tree, what did he expect to find? Leaves? No. He expected to find fruit. He expected to find figs. Well, did it bother him that he did not find what he expected to find? Yeah, yes, it did. The tree did not provide him with what he expected, with what it was supposed to provide him, what it was designed to provide him, what it was made for to provide him. It failed to provide. Now, let's put ourselves in the place of the fig tree. That's where it gets real frightening. If Jesus comes to us expecting to find certain fruit, and he finds none, will he be disappointed? How is he going to react to me if I'm in the same state that the fig tree is in? I have been made to produce fruit too. I'm a special creation of God, just like that tree. What if I fail to do what I was made to do? In other words, we have been recreated by Christ in salvation to bring about things that he expects from us. Now, if I don't do these things, do I anticipate that he will do anything about it? In other words, if I don't live up to God's expectations, do I think he'll just say, ho-hum? How will he react? What will be his response? What steps will he take? If I'm like the fig tree. Now, I can't answer the question for you, but just thinking about the question bothers me. I think a lot of times we excuse our failures by basing them on a plea of ignorance. Well, I didn't know, God, that you expected me to have figs. I know I'm a fig tree, but I didn't know you expected me to have figs. I know I'm supposed to be holy born, but I didn't know you expected me to be holy. So I think sometimes we prefer to be ignorant. Ignorance is bliss. It's to our advantage. So it sort of gives us some maneuvering room to plead innocent when we are not doing what God expects of us. We can always say, well, I didn't know that. No one ever told me I was supposed to do that. I think we ought to be honest and just say, we don't want to know what God expects of us. I don't think the bride wants to know what the groom expects, or the groom wants to know what the bride expects. We really don't want to know what the employer expects. Because it gives us some way of getting out of doing some things. But you know, it's not hard to find out what God expects. It's not really hard. This is not information that's hidden away in some dusty attic behind locked doors. I mean, this is information that God makes available. I think it's the first thing probably he made Adam and Eve said, "Now I want you to sit down, boys. I want you to sit down, boy, girls, sit down, man and woman, Adam and Eve. I want you to sit down." Because the first thing we're going to begin with is a class on what I expect of you. I think that was the first thing on the agenda following the creation of Adam and Eve. God sits down with them, "Now I'm going to tell you what I expect of you." Well, what's going to be the first thing that you do when you go to heaven? Now, the first thing, I mean, you're going to be told what God expects of you. Do you have any idea what you're going to do in heaven? Well, they're going to tell you what to do. They're going to tell you what to be expected of you. Now, I said, God doesn't hide this information from us, this expectation list. Have you ever heard of God's laws, God's commandments, and God's statutes, and God's rules? Have you ever heard of those? All those are, folks, are nothing but God spelling out in clear detail what it is that He expects from His fig trees. Of course, we prefer that we spend our time finding out what it is that we can expect from God. So we search His promises, and we underline all His various blessings, and we focus on His wonder-working power, and we list the benefits of His love, and remind God of His merciful ways. We want to make sure that God remembers what it is that we can expect from Him. Remember the times that people come to Jesus and then ask Him, "What must I do to inherit eternal life?" He'd always say, "Believe." But then He would say, "Follow me. I expect believers to follow me." Now this brings us down to our motto, WDGEOM. What does God expect of me? People say, I don't really have to go to church to go to heaven. I don't really have to do this or do that to go to heaven. Folks, that's not the question that you ought to be asking. The question ought to be, WDGEOM, what does God expect of me? That's the question. We need to focus our attention not on going to heaven and what we expect there, but what God expects of us before we get to go to heaven. You're right now in the state of a fig tree, folks, and God expects something from us. And when you ever do get to go to heaven, one day you're going to face a judgment based on WDGEOM. What does God expect of me, and did I do it?